If you want to fine-tune your prompting skills, make sure to attend O'Reilly's Prompt to Product Showdown virtual event, led by Lucas Suarez, on August 15 from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific Daylight Time. You'll see how five experts used carefully crafted prompts to build minimum viable products with generative AI. All right, so welcome back to the Generative AI in the Real World podcast here with O'Reilly. And today we have a fantastic guest at the front lines of helping companies work their way through generative AI. We have Tim Persons. He is an AI leader at PricewaterhouseCoopers. So Tim, welcome to the Generative AI in the Real World podcast.
Thanks very much, Ben. Great to be here.
So in terms of implementing generative AI, so what are some of the key challenges that enterprises face when they go from, let's say, an experimentation phase to an actual deployment?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. I think at the heart of that is moving from experimental to an operational phase is all about trust. And trust is something that's earned, which means the technology has to be allowed to show itself to earn that trust. And so it's really a robust testing, evaluation, and developmental pathway from that lower tech readiness maturity into the higher levels toward deployment. There are folks that are rightly skeptical about this, and not all AI is the same. So the risks with AI just depend on, well, what kind of AI it is, the data that it's using, the models it's using, and the problem statement that you laid out before it. What were you actually trying to get it to do? And so testing those things out, proving it is where I think the biggest thing is. The second thing, and maybe arguably even the biggest one, is really cultural. It's just getting employees, leadership alike, both comfortable with the Gen AI technology, just understanding what it is, what it's good at, and what it's not good at. Because it's a fantastically powerful technology. It's truly a watershed, game-changing type technology, but it still is not a technology that does everything well. So that just, again, boils down to having that discipline on developing and advancing, investing in it based on a problem statement that's well-defined, rather than just walking with the technology to say, here's what I could, here I'm doing something clever and let me try and change your life, without understanding the operators or the mission context that you're asking it to solve. So culture is a big one that implies a lot of upskilling, a lot of conversations. And in my opinion, it's not possible to over-communicate on this technology.
And Tim, what do you think about the state of readiness of companies' data? Because it seems like to a large extent, people forget that when you get down to it and want something that's customized or tuned to your application or use case, you still need your own data to do that. And so do you think that people are thinking through, like, what is a data strategy for generative AI?
Yeah, excellent point. And that's one of the big things that I and we and my firm recommend, is a robust data strategy. And having data and data governance is more than just having, a well-written policy document, handed down from your chief data officer or CIO or somebody from the C-suite. It really is about how you operationalize that in a context of building trust. And what we're seeing is a greater focus and intentionality on data and data governance than we've ever seen before. And that's a good thing. But I think companies increasingly are waking up and realizing so much of their asset values are these intangibles, like their own data, and the relative gaps they have in their data, or the relative quality challenges they have with past data. They are definitely feeling those slings and arrows now. But that said, once you get more into a way of life of focusing on quality data and focusing on fit for purpose data, and still abiding by your governance, having the right controls and things like that, that are necessary to manage risks with data, then you have every reason to believe, or you've laid the foundation for a bright future with AI. So definitely seeing a lot of emphasis on this, as is appropriate, And as you know, in terms of what companies are doing.
And it seems like, Tim, now that this technology lends itself to really cross-functional collaboration across many teams, this is an area where companies, I think, should invest in a little bit of education of the workforce, right?
So absolutely.
Just to kind of lay out what are the limitations and actual capabilities, because the reality is, even if you use these things properly and correctly, they will still do unintended things.
That's right. And I think part of the upskilling is talent acquisition or talent partnership is not just, it does involve everything where it's data scientists, machine learning experts, AI, generative AI type experts, you know, folks with statistical computing experience in a random forest, let's say. All of that is yes, but it really is, I think, you said it well, this requires and demands an interdisciplinarity that I've never seen any other tech require. And I think that's good, but it does mean a lot of the organizational culture change and the way internal organizations communicate and partner together in an organic manner in a very agile, fluid, flexible way with the technology that the technology allows, frankly, is a really good thing. But that's a big part of that culture change, not just understanding it, but how you apply it so that you're really doing a business model reinvention internally for whatever it is that your current your business is trying to accomplish.
And actually, I think, Tim, I think sometimes I think people underestimate also the importance of bringing good user interface into some of these applications, because one, the applications we're seeing now tend to be co-pilots, so you really want a good user experience to begin with anyway. And secondly, you can gather good feedback to actually improve your model and application if you just think through a little bit some of that user experience and user interface.
That's exactly right. And that brings up the design type thinking that I think these interdisciplinary teams that need to emerge with all these various skills need to apply to do that and focus on the end user first, that experience, and work backward from that and say, how do we deliver that? Not just take an LLM and say, okay, we can start to throw data at it. What are we going to do with it? It really does start with that user and problem experience, working backward and getting to those tech, applying that where it's as appropriate. Getting your, you mentioned fine tuning and things like that. There's lots of value companies are going to see by increasingly mining their own proprietary data and keeping them themselves, but generating new value and insights that they've never been able to do before, and at a scale and speed they've never been able to do before.
So let's close with workforce and workforce training, since O'Reilly, after all, is a learning platform. So Tim, maybe you can share with us what you've seen some of the leading companies have done well in terms of preparing their workforce for generative AI.
Yeah, it's great. I'm happy to brag on my own firm on this, just because we put a major investment into, you know, something we called My AI. So we had announced last year a $1 billion investment last spring, and most of that wasn't just, you know, putting money outside our firm to various tech vendors. I mean, we do partner with all of the major the tech vendor, or we have alliances with them. But it was really focused on the spend on the ability to have this. Let's get it into the hands of our users in a democratized way as quickly as possible. And that included down to our, you know, entry-level interns, because again, we want to leverage that. And we're seeing tremendous benefits from that. But it was an intentional L&D process where it was very focused on this AI. And it was like saying, look, we're gonna give you the tools. And it was also, what I liked about it gave a safe space to do it. Like, because we could use our language models, but we could do it within our secure cloud instance. And so that, you know, because we're stewards of not only our own data, but so many of our clients' data, we have to be ever vigilant on making sure that we maintain that confidentiality, and we do. But it allowed us to have our cake and eat it too by having that sandbox at scale, and even, you know, not only at the US firm, but now it's expanded globally, where we have our chatbot available, and you could do the RAG approaches, you could do various things and experiments to test things out. So that's a good way to do things. We had trained on prompting. We've trained on data and we've trained on, or we've had instead of hackathons, it's like a prompt-a-thon kind of thing, or you know, just getting folks together and having fun about who could do the best prompt or the best outcome or the best thing of whatever problem we're trying to solve. So yeah, lots of good things go out, but it looks a lot like that.
I love it because it's learning by doing.
Exactly.
Right. And basically, and it's also fun.
Yes, right. And again, it can be done and customized to a company or a firm where your stuff doesn't go to the language model.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the O'Reilly Podcast, Generative AI in the Real World. If you want to listen to the full version, please log in to the platform at O'Reilly.com.